A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth. An RKO radio picture. Now, in a black and white film, a title appears in ornate letters, like a page of a medieval manuscript. RKO Pictures Incorporated presents Victor Hugo's immortal classic, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Starring Charles Laughton as the Hunchback, with Sir Cedric Hardwicke, Thomas Mitchell, Edmund O'Brien, and Maureen O'Hara as Esmeralda. Produced by Pandro S. Berman. Screenplay by Sonia Lavien. Adaptation by Bruno Frank. Copyright 1939, RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated. Directed by William Dieterle. Words appear. With the end of the 15th century, the Middle Ages came to a close. Europe began to see great changes. France, ravaged by 100 years of war, at last found peace. The people under Louis XI felt free to hope again, to dream of progress. But superstition and prejudice often stood in the way, seeking to crush the adventurous spirit of man. Now in a printer shop overlooking the Cathedral of Notre Dame, three men kneel in prayer. The enormous church with its twin bell towers dominates a village square. The oldest of the praying men crosses himself and rises.
I have never heard a more beautiful angelus. Who is the bell ringer of Notre Dame?
Quasimodo, Your Majesty. The people simply call him the Hunchback.
Quasimodo? What an odd name. And now, Master Fisher, let's see what reason my High Justice had for asking me to come to your shop. What do you call this apparatus?
The German inventor Gutenberg calls it a printing press, Your Majesty.
What is it for?
To print books, Your Majesty.
For whom?
For the people. They will learn to read when they can get books. I can print a volume like this one in a few weeks, and quite inexpensively.
The king takes a book.
Imagine, Frollo. A few weeks. When I ordered my prayer book, it took them years to copy it out, and cost me a fortune.
He compares the two.
This is more beautiful than the printed book. Nevertheless, the printing press is a miracle.
A horrifying miracle.
Horrifying? This small press?
Small things have a way of overmastering the great. The Nile rat kills the crocodile. This small press can destroy a kingdom.
Oh, come, come, my High Justice. Don't exaggerate.
The printer holds newly inked pages.
What is that?
It is the first page of a new book, Your Majesty.
Let me see it.
The king takes the paper to the sunlit window.
On the freedom of thought. Who wrote it?
Pierre Gringoire.
Gringoire? Who is he?
A French poet, Your Majesty.
A heretic, sir. To spread him is to communicate disease.
How do you know? It may be a great blessing to France if people can get books and learn to read. To me, it's a new form of expression of thought. Out there is the old form. All over France, in every city, there stand cathedrals like this one. Triumphal monuments of the past. They tower over the homes of our people like mighty guardians, keeping alive the invincible faith of the Christian. Every arch, every column, every statue is a carved leaf out of our history, a book in stone, glorifying the spirit of France. The cathedrals are the handwriting of the past. The press is of our time. And I won't do anything to stop it, Frollo.
Sir, we must break the press and hang the printer, for between them they will destroy our old and holy order.
No, I'm not such a fool.
I, for my part, will protect France from these printed books as I will protect it from witches, sorcerers, and gypsies. The foreign race that is overrunning all of Europe.
Now, beyond the city walls, travelers approach. Dark-haired with olive skin, they wear patterned shawls, headbands, and large brassy jewelry. Parisian children run ahead of them down the road toward a guarded bridge where armored men assault the traveling band with whips.
Why do you stop us?
Because no gypsies can enter Paris any longer without a permit. It's the new law.
If the others can it too, why can't we?
They are Frenchmen. You're gypsies. Foreigners.
Foreigners. You came yesterday. We come today.
A young woman breaks away from the gypsy band and slips into a busy market square. A guard hurries after her through the crowd.
Let them pass. It's Fool's Day.
Fool's Day or not, we don't want these foreigners.
Stop her! Catch her!
A villager runs frantically up the street.
Rain, Grandma. The hunchback of Notre Dame just crossed my path.
Go home, quickly, and light the candle.
That won't help against Quasimodo. He's possessed. Yvonne! Aren't you going to the festival to see the king?
I can't. Mother says there are too many thieves and beggars in the crowd.
Oh, they'll get you at home just as well. You'll see.
Parisians fill the narrow streets where merchants man their stalls. Between stone buildings, strings of flags decorate the square. Wooden platforms erected above the crowd serve as stages for entertainment. Musicians play for dancers who toss their partners around on their shoulders. One spectator tries to trip them as they skip past. A man grabs a woman and kisses her heartily. At a wheel of fortune, a thief stealthily cuts free a reveler's purse. Our view shifts through the chaotic scene from wrestlers to gymnasts, a collared bear, a hog roasting on a spit, dancers and drinkers. On a grandstand, the king and his advisors watch with merriment as a man balances on a ball. High Justice Frollo stares, stone-faced.
Well, what's he trying to do?
He's heard it rumored that the earth is round and is attempting to walk to the Indies, the idiot.
It's not round, it's flat.
The idiot? There are some famous geographers and mathematicians who also believe the earth is round.
It isn't round, it's flat.
Do you recollect that letter we had from, what's his name, Christopher Columbus, who wrote claiming that he could, by steering a westerly course, reach the Indies?
It's flat.
I'm greatly tempted to endow the venture.
Our country could not afford the risk of such an enterprise.
Columbus.
Frollo.
Man's the laughing stock of the court of Spain.
Who knows? The future may prove Ferdinand's court was the laughing stock.
It isn't round.
What are you mumbling about, Doctor?
The earth isn't round, it's flat.
How do you know?
I've observed it in all my travels over Europe. It's flat, everywhere it's flat.
Oh, let's listen to the play.
A poet.
The old can never last. The new is claiming its place. It's foolish to cling to the past. Believe in the future's face.
It pains me to relate that death is the fate of noble and peasant alike.
You are born in a womb and end in a tomb.
A death character appears on stage and swings his scythe. Now some ragged beggars laze around the square. A legless man scoots past on a wheeled cart.
What kind's coming?
One beggar holds out his hand as a burly man on crutches hobbles over. Clopin.
Morning.
How's business? Hey. How's business?
It would be much better if they weren't all watching that play.
I'll tend to that.
Who'd better?
You rest and live, and rest again.
The beggar, Clopin, pops up in the crowd.
You do not live in vain.
I make you eat too much. You throw it up again.
The poet jumps to his feet.
You stupid, ignorant drunkards, you...
I offer you truth.
We don't want your truth.
The spectators throw garbage, driving the poet and actors from their stage. Now a bearded villager climbs onto the platform above the crowd.
We will now choose the king of fools.
Applicants, come forth. Men, women, the ugliest face wins the crown. Ugly faces!
Spectators stretch their faces. On stage, a man poses in a paper window.
How do you like his face?
Next, a painted face appears in the window. Two wide eyes gaze from the top of a bald man's head. He shows the crowd his real face, and they pitch soggy lettuce at him. On the grandstand, the king grins.
The ugly is very appealing to man.
It's a matter of taste.
No, it's instinct. One shrinks from the ugly, yet wants to look at it. There's a devilish fascination in it. We extract pleasure from horror.
None of the mob, sir.
Think so? Look at our friends. They don't look exactly uninterested.
Noblemen and women in fine clothes stare and smile.
It's horrible. That's the prettiest ugliness I've ever seen.
Awful.
Beautiful. What? That girl. What a beauty.
A handsome guard points out the gypsy girl.
I've never seen her before, have you?
She is pretty.
In her 20s, with long curly hair, the gypsy dances before a gathered crowd. She smiles brightly at the king. Behind a musician, the poet beams.
Who is she? What's her name?
Esmeralda.
Esmeralda.
Wearing a bodice and a long skirt, she catches the king's eye.
People seem to like her, and so do I. Doctor, lend me half a livre.
Half a livre?
You afraid I won't repay you?
She's a gypsy, sir.
Who cares about her race? She's pretty.
He tosses a coin down to Esmeralda, and she bows. The king looks at Frollo.
Doesn't she make your pulse beat faster? What about you, Doctor?
I'm a widower 4 times, sire, but I could begin all over again.
Frollo watches the girl with a hawkish gaze. As Esmeralda dances, she sees an eye staring out from beneath the grandstand.
What's the matter?
That eye, staring at me.
Somebody's in there.
It's an animal! It's a bee!
Come out of here, a good Christian!
Let's get out of there and see what it is!
Get him out of there!
The crowd presses under the stand.
Come there! Go after him! Go ahead! Get him!
Find out the other way!
A stooped figure lurches away with several people after him.
It's Quasimodo! It's Hunchback of Notre Dame!
As the hunchback emerges, a mob of peasants, nobles, and guards surrounds him and surges like a river toward the player's platform. They push him through the stage curtain and wait with eager stares for his head to appear in the paper window. The crowd recoils from his drooping eye and turned up nose. Frollo turns to leave.
No.
Oh, don't spoil their fun, Frollo. Stay here.
One of Quasimodo's eyes scans the crowd while the other stares glassily. A woman thrusts her arm into the air. Quasimodo swings down from the window, kicking a man down the platform's shallow steps. The bearded villager grins.
Well, Quasimodo, we knew you were ugly, but didn't know you were so ugly. We've never been so close to you before. You've always been up in your bell towers. And now we want to make you king of fools. What do you say?
He pats Quasimodo's humped back. The bell ringer stares curiously into the man's eyes.
What's the matter? Are you deaf?
Quasimodo snaps his teeth at him.
Play to you. I offer you the fool's crown, and you bite me.
He's deaf, and the bells have made him so.
Deaf? Maybe he's dumb, too.
That makes him the perfect king.
Oh, he can speak.
But he doesn't like to.
Well, what'll we do about it?
Show him the crown.
The crown has dangling bells like a jester's cap. Quasimodo flinches under it.
By unanimous vote, we now proclaim you king of fools.
Quasimodo takes off the crown and looks at it. Studying the anxious crowd, he curls his mouth in a crooked smile and recrowns himself. The crowd turns and they all wiggle their rear ends at him. Quasimodo gets on the back of a stuffed hog and watches the peasants dance. A man drapes a fleece shawl over Quasimodo's shoulders. Taking up a wooden scepter, the hunchback wraps a villager with it. Men lift Quasimodo's stuffed hog litter to their shoulders and join the parade of revelers swirling around the platform. Frollo glares hotly at the laughing bell ringer. On stage, the doe-eyed poet sticks his head through the paper window.
I am the true king of fools. I battle for beauty and the ugly gets crowned. What greater fool can there be than I?
As Quasimodo passes on a decorated wagon, peasants and nobles wave. Frollo rides a galloping black horse through the square. Surrounded by the throng, he draws rein beside the wagon.
Stop!
Quasimodo gapes as Frollo snatches the fleece from his back. The justice grabs the scepter and breaks it over his saddle. Quasimodo removes his fool's crown. As Frollo clenches his thin lips, Quasimodo hangs his head. He jumps down from the wagon.
He can't take away our king!
Men rush forward, but pull back as Quasimodo's distorted face stares at them. He lumbers away behind Frollo's horse, swinging his jester crown by one of its long points. Holding the horse's harness, the hunchback walks with a bow-legged gait. Some tradesmen start to follow. Quasimodo stops and stalks toward them, swinging his crown. They back away, and he hurries to catch up with Frollo. Elsewhere, a court official slaps away a paper held by the poet, Gringoire.
No bills, only petitions.
But I need money. The actors must be paid. The play was ordered.
This is no time to ask for money.
It never is.
So we go hungry.
Here, don't push.
Esmeralda.
Don't push.
I must see the king. I must.
Must.
Hey, you gypsy. Let me see your city permit.
She flees past Gringoire. The poet blocks the guard's path, grinning. Now Esmeralda races up the cathedral steps and through a massive door. An archbishop holds up his hand to her pursuers.
Sanctuary?
We've got to arrest her. She's a gypsy.
Church is sanctuary for all.
They can't enter Paris anymore. It's a law now.
The power of the law ends at this threshold.
The guard scowls.
It's no use. The king himself could do nothing here.
Inside, the archbishop finds Esmeralda in the church's expansive nave.
Don't be afraid. You are safe here. What have you done? Why are they after you?
She stares into his gentle eyes.
I'm a gypsy.
That's not your fault. It's an act of God.
He turns to a priest.
Take her to the bell tower. Quasimodo will look after her.
Quasimodo is not here, Your Grace.
Where is he?
I don't know, Your Grace.
Later, Frollo arrives at the cathedral, with Quasimodo still following. The High Justice encounters a young priest wearing a heavy white robe.
Where is my brother?
His Grace is in the vestry, preparing for the evening service.
Under the stone gaze of the carved saints adorning the church, Quasimodo shyly swings his crown, then hurries inside. In the vestry, Frollo finds the archbishop dressed in his mitre and an embroidered cloak.
Lord. I must speak to you.
What is it?
It's about Quasimodo. He made a spectacle of himself before the king and all the people.
Where is he now?
Up in his tower. You must imprison him again. He must have nothing to do with anybody outside the church.
But you have more influence over him than I. He's your foundling, Jean. You picked him up on the church steps, not I. Ever since he was a child, he has looked to you as his protector.
Now on the tower stairs, Quasimodo holds onto a spiraling banister as he climbs higher. Above him, wooden catwalks and ladders lead up into the belfry. Quasimodo playfully jiggles a heavy bell rope which dangles within his reach. Putting on the fool's crown, he smiles broadly and tugs again on the rope, this time squatting with the effort. Swings, pulling up the rope and Quasimodo with it. Outside, villagers cross the square and enter the church. Quasimodo strains at his task up in the bell tower. Short and stout, he has a pale round face and thinning hair. Downstairs, worshippers kneel on the stone floor of the cathedral nave. Esmeralda walks with a priest and looks around the cathedral in awe.
Quasimodo is back now. I'll teach it to him.
Esmeralda points to a statue.
Who's that?
Virgin Mary, the Mother of God.
The stone figure of Mary holds an infant Christ in her hand. Esmeralda gazes at her open-mouthed.
The Mother of God.
If we open our hearts to her with faith, she comforts us.
How can I speak to her?
Kneel down and pray, as the others are doing.
In the nave, kneeling worshippers make the sign of the cross. Esmeralda settles on her knees at the feet of the statue and looks wide-eyed at the Virgin's face.
I've never prayed before, but the priest told me you help all those who are in need.
The Parisians pray.
Give me security, give me happiness, give me always a good home.
Give me a rich husband,
give me many admirers,
give me beauty.
Give me a rich husband,
give me prosperity.
Give me
Esmeralda.
Take all I have, but please help my people. They're in great need, in great danger.
Frollo surprises her.
What are you doing in Notre Dame?
I'm praying.
You cannot pray here. You are a heathen.
Who are you? You're not a priest, and yet you look like one.
I am what I wish to be. Get up and leave this church. You desecrate the very stones on which you kneel.
I?
Yes, first you dance publicly without shame, awakening in every man the weak and sinful desire to look at you.
Dancing isn't sinful to me. It's like talking.
Get up.
Leave me alone.
He grabs her and she freezes at the sight of his hand.
Your hand? There's the mark of the devil on it.
You witch. You're saying that I shall have you hanged.
Now I know who you are. Mother of God, don't let him hang me. Protect me, protect me.
Praying won't help you. You come from an evil race.
You don't know anything about my people.
Honest people don't live by witchcraft and magic.
Standing, she looks him in the eye.
If we really had the power of magic, do you think we'd choose to be outcast, to be poor and persecuted always? Surely we'd use it for our own benefit.
The gypsies should be destroyed by fire and sword.
You mustn't talk like that in here. The Mother of God is listening. I'm a heathen, yet I could be here all my life and never have an evil thought. Never speak. Just be here.
As she admires the church, Frollo gazes at her bosom.
That window up there, glowing in red and blue, with the setting sun breaking through, and how the light floats around the tall columns. They're like the high pines in the forest. It's so quiet and peaceful here, almost quieter than in the woods, where the birds chatter and sing when I come. You know, the birds and deer eat out of my hand. They're not shy at all when you're kind to them.
I know.
She stiffens.
You like animals?
Yes.
You say that? You?
Brightening, she smiles.
Then you cannot hate as much as you pretend to. Somewhere in your heart there must be love. I know. It in your eyes. God has shown me the goodness in you. Surely he'll show me a way to help my people.
She kneels to
Mary.
Mother
God, you know how gypsies are cruelly driven from country to country. So you see, I have to speak to the king.
Nearby, the king overhears.
We'll do something to help my people. Please do make him listen to me.
He will.
Esmeralda turns.
He will be heard. But you must give me a good reason.
She remains on her knees.
They tell me gypsies are a lot of thieves.
That's not true, Your Majesty. Whenever we steal, it's because we're hungry. My people have good hearts, and we love you. You have a good heart too, sire, because you've promised to help us.
The king smiles at Frollo, who keeps his fixed gaze on the girl.
You little witch. I merely meant that I might consider it. Where do you live? Where shall I send you my answer?
To Notre Dame?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Good. Then I'll send my message here.
Oh, thank you.
Esmeralda turns back to Mary's statue.
Thank you, Mother of God. Thank you. Thank you. I must go and tell my people.
Wait.
Why?
You live here in sanctuary, don't you?
Yes.
Don't be so disturbed. You will enjoy living in the bell tower high above all Paris. I often like to go there myself. Come, let me show you.
Now on the tower stairs, Quasimodo hops down the spiral staircase. Frollo and Esmeralda enter the tower from the sanctuary.
The bell ringer will watch over you.
Esmeralda stares nervously up the worn steps. Higher up, Quasimodo takes another turn, descending toward them. As Frollo walks a few steps ahead of Esmeralda, he comes face to face with a hunchback bell ringer.
Don't be afraid. It's Quasimodo the bell ringer. He's harmless.
Quasimodo grins at Esmeralda, who hurries back down the worn stone steps. Frollo races after her and grabs her at the sanctuary door.
Don't run away. Come with me.
Breaking free, she runs down more stairs. Frollo glares at Quasimodo, then sharply snaps his fingers. The bell ringer takes off after Esmeralda. Outside, he follows her in a skipping run into the shadowy streets. Under cover of the cathedral, Frollo watches the chase. Esmeralda hides down a walkway, then dives behind some barrels. Quasimodo cuts through an alley and comes out above her hiding place. As Esmeralda starts to flee, she looks up at his ghastly, moonlit face. He beckons her with a wave of his hand, but she bolts. They run down parallel paths separated by a wall. A bright light from an unseen window glares on the mud-soaked road. Catching her breath, Esmeralda looks back and finds the street behind her empty. She presses her back against the wall. Now in a barnyard, Quasimodo jumps over a plow yoke where Gringoire is sleeping. The poet awakens in time to see the hunchback scramble over the wall above him. From his perch, Quasimodo sees Esmeralda walking slowly on her way, holding onto the wall for support. She stops a moment and listens, her shapely silhouette cast against the high wall. She gazes into the darkness. Suddenly, Quasimodo jumps down in front of her. He easily lifts her over his shoulder. Gringoire heaves himself onto the high wall.
Devil, you unholy monster! Let her go! Help!
A handsome captain steps onto a balcony.
Save her! Save her!
What are you yelling about?
There! The hunchback! There, the gypsy dancer! He's running away with a saber!
The armored man jumps onto his horse and rides away. Noblemen follow, whipping their horses through the narrow streets. Near the cathedral, Quasimodo ducks behind an unfinished stone wall. Esmeralda, now collapsed in a faint, hangs limply over his rounded shoulders. He dashes into the open, and the captain drives his horse around after him. Cornering the hunchback, the captain and the two noblemen surround him.
Take her! Take the girl!
Clopin's band of thieves look out of their hiding place.
Someone criminal! Who is it?
It's the hunchback.
Quasimodo struggles with his captors.
Stop.
As the beggars grab Quasimodo, a toothless man with an eye patch grins.
Let me hang him!
Leave that to the law. Don't let him get away. Tie him up well.
On his horse, the armored captain, Phoebus, beams at Esmeralda.
What's your name?
Esmeralda.
He cups her chin in his hand.
I remember it. And I'll see you again.
Phoebus departs with Quasimodo bound in ropes.
Come on, you beast! Come on!
Two beggar women take Esmeralda by each arm.
Now we'll go inside.
No, I'd better wait out here.
Never wait for a man, my dear.
He'll come back. He will. Sure as his name is Phoebus.
Esmeralda's white teeth shine as she smiles.
Phoebus.
Gringoire.
Congratulations, so you got him.
Thanks to your help.
My help?
Yes, you yell loud enough.
I will arouse old Paris against such monsters.
Is the gypsy girl your sweetheart?
Gringoire sticks out his chin.
Most special, my dear Captain Phoebus. And remember, I will repay you, not she.
Losing his footing, he topples from the unfinished wall. As Phoebus rides away, Gringoire laughs at himself on the ground, then winces as he tries to sit up. His jolly smile suddenly drains as he notices movement in the shadows. A legless beggar crawls toward him on his belly, holding out a tin cup.
Benny, sir.
Gringoire trembles, Benny, backs away, sir. And pulls himself to his feet. The eye-patched beggar sits in a niche just above Gringoire's head. The poet flees. Down a dank alley, Gringoire runs into more beggars, climbing out of the street and narrow walls. They stalk toward him on crutches and drive him off. Gringoire ducks behind a barricade. Gringoire nearly bolts right into his pursuer's hands, but makes another escape. Stumbling along in the darkness, he suddenly finds himself in an open square. Dozens of paupers lounge around a bonfire. He looks around. A one-legged man untucks his hidden other leg and stamps his foot on the ground. A blind man opens his eyes and blinks in the firelight. He pours out coins from his alms cup and counts them. Two beggars hood Gringoire with a woven bag and lead him away. Now, in a basement hideout, men and women stand in line at a table and turn in their loot. Gringoire's captors bring him in.
Where's the king?
He's busy now. You have to wait.
The beggar Clopin counts stacked coins on a tray. Nearby, a woman comforts Esmeralda.
You belong to us now.
Who's the king here? I and nobody else gives the kiss of initiation.
He pecks her forehead.
Many of your tribe have found this a haven. You too will find peace and a home here.
In the shadows, five beggars wrestle another. The eye-patched beggar reports.
What's the matter?
He doesn't want to pay his daily share.
Come with me.
Leave it off!
The subdued beggar's clothes hang in tatters. Clopin shows a cruel smile.
You know what the rules are. Pay up your share or...
He draws a knife. The beggar draws his own and stands toe-to-toe with Clopin.
I'll give you a count of three to change your mind. One. Two.
He stabs the beggar's shoulder and lets him fall to the floor. Trotting onto a platform above his court, Clopin scowls.
Who's that?
A stranger. They said they caught him prowling around on the court.
How'd he get in? Is the guard asleep? Let me see him.
The eye-patched beggar takes off Gringoire's hood.
Bow down. You're standing before the king of beggars.
Who are you?
Permit me to introduce myself. Maître Gringoire, doctor of the seven liberal arts.
You know where you are?
The court of miracles. Where the blind can see. And the lame walk.
You know what happens to people who come in here uninvited?
I can imagine. Let me hang him.
He's a spy.
He's a doctor.
I'm a poet, whose play was done at the festival.
Anyone caught here who's not a beggar or a thief must hang.
No! No, you can't do this to me. I haven't done anything.
It's a rule.
I'm not a spy.
Eyepatch carries him to a table while another man readies a rope.
What a pity. My ballad could make you immortal.
What? What'd you say?
He shoves Eyepatch aside.
What? Say it again.
I intended to write a poem in your honor to glorify your reign. Let me hang him, please.
Quiet! You're not trying to cheat me.
Keep me alive and you will live in history.
Oh, imagine my Clopin in history.
Don't put your all in.
Besides, I belong here naturally. Being a poet, I am already a vagabond and I can learn quickly to be a thief. And I will amuse you with such rhyming eloquence as you've never dreamed of.
Good intentions are not enough. They've never put an onion in the soup yet. You'll have to undergo a test. Then we'll see if you're good for anything.
Get the bellboy ready!
Bring it down! Yeah,
they lower a dummy from the rafters. Fashioned from stuffed clothes, it's covered with jingle bells.
Now then, up you go, up! Stand in this stool, one leg!
I'll break my neck.
And you'll save us the hanging.
The dummy dangles above the floor.
Try to take a purse out of that pocket. But if one single bell jingles, you've failed.
Gringoire sweats.
And then?
Then you hang.
Can you do it? I'm above that sort of thing. I cut throats. I don't cut purses. Plan.
Standing on a rickety stool, Gringoire folds his hands prayerfully before the bell dummy.
Don't tinkle. Please, little bells. Don't jingle. My life depends on it.
Sweat glows on Gringoire's face. With trembling hands, he reaches up. The stool breaks and he grabs the dummy.
There must be something easier I could try.
Surely. Get right up and take the bellboy's place.
Too bad. And I'd almost come to like him.
Clopin! Why not give him a chance to marry one of the girls?
Clopin's queen pets his broad shoulders.
Let me hang him.
Clopin whistles through his fingers.
Girls! Forward for sail! Forward for sail! Forward for sail!
What does that mean?
Forward for sail.
If one of our girls will marry you, you are free. And I can't hang you. A charming idea.
Wearing a feathered hat, Clopin struts.
Going! Going!
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Eyepatch slips a noose around Gringoire's neck.
God!
That neck.
Wait!
From the back of the motley crowd, Esmeralda's clean, smooth face appears. She pushes forward.
Are you going to hang that man?
Surely. Unless you take him for your husband.
Esmeralda stares at the poet.
I'll take him.
Well, do you want her or not?
Gringoire nods as if entranced. Still noosed, he drops to one knee.
My rope! My rope!
The wedding jump.
Esmeralda drinks.
Take it from Esmeralda. Drink and break it.
Esmeralda lowers the earthen pitcher from her lips and hands it to Gringoire. She gazes kindly at him as he drinks from it, then gives him an encouraging nod. Standing, he smiles broadly and dashes the jug to the ground. Eyepatch sadly unties the noose.
And he had such a nice neck.
Let's escort them to the bridal chamber.
Esmeralda takes Clopin's arm. The King of Beggars holds a flaming torch as he leads a procession. Some thieves make an archway with their staffs and poles. Others wave brooms, chairs, and crutches. The parade enters a darkened chamber. Esmeralda and Clopin walk in first, with Clopin's queen and Gringoire arm in arm behind. The king and queen dance in a circle around the newlyweds, then leave them alone. Darkness falls over the room. Esmeralda looks around. A metal grate lies in the center of the room. She crouches before the makeshift fireplace.
Here's flint and tinder.
She strikes the flint with a knife blade, and a tiny spark appears. Together, she and Gringoire blow on the glowing tinder, which illuminates their faces as it catches flame.
Now a little wood.
Let me help you.
No, it's a woman's part to build a fire.
But it was a man who first brought it to earth.
Who?
Prometheus.
Who's that?
A god who stole it from heaven by holding a rod to the sun till it burned into flame. He created creatures out of clay and blew his breath into them, and they came to life. And they too could make fires to warm their bodies.
As we do?
Just as we do. Oh, Esmeralda, I feel as if... How can I tell you how I feel? This day, first the people ridiculed me, then I found you,
And I lost you. And now...
He lays his head on her shoulder.
Here we are together.
He lies in her lap.
Married.
It was such a miracle how I waited through the dark and endless night. When before, my days I hated. Now I welcome Phoebus light. Phoebus, king of day.
She turns away.
Esmeralda.
Grangois gets to his knees.
What did I say to hurt you?
Nothing.
He turns her head to face him.
Oh, you must tell me.
Who is Phoebus?
Phoebus, the sun god.
The sun god?
Why do you ask?
Esmeralda's brief smile disappears. She gazes at Grangois.
I love a man named Phoebus.
Grangois lets her go.
Not that captain who saved you from the hunchback.
Yes.
So you don't love me. It was nothing but pity, pity, pity.
He crosses to a window.
I'm sorry if I hurt you.
He glowers a moment, then his dark eyes soften.
Well, since you won't have me as your husband, maybe you'll have me for your friend.
My friend?
Do you know what friendship is?
Brother and sister. Like two petals on the same flower.
And love?
That's to be two and at the same time one.
I love you, Esmeralda. And so I'm ready to live with you as it shall please you. As husband and wife, if you think good, or as brother and sister, if you like it better.
I'm enough of a philosopher to hold everything in the proper equilibrium.
What?
The proper balance.
Oh, you're a juggler?
No, I'm sorry. I can't juggle.
But you can learn. I'll teach you.
Esmeralda prances across the room.
Look.
Picking up a chair, she balances one of its legs on her chin. Grangois shows a toothy grin.
Oh, that's wonderful. I could never do it.
Try it.
It's no use, sir.
Don't talk.
No.
Just balance.
While Grangois tries to perform the trick, Esmeralda slips away. The chair falls. In the courtyard, the beggars scurry in a panic.
Something must have happened. The whole court is...
Grangois sees he's alone.
Esmeralda? Esmeralda?
Now Clopin reads a guard's orders.
What's the matter?
He has an order to arrest all the gypsies.
No, only the girls. Round them up! Round them up!
A corps of guards rushes into the court. Later, High Justice Frollo sits in his study. A dozen cats wander freely around the room over stacks of books.
Morning, Your Honor.
What is it?
The gypsy girls are ready for your inspection.
Frollo puts down a fat, long-haired cat and strides out. A line of women stretches before him, all with bushy dark hair and long homespun skirts. They shy away from Frollo as he sweeps past them and looks them over. An attendant opens a gate for him to leave.
The one I'm looking for is not here. Release them. Did you find out in which prison Quasimodo is being held?
Not yet, Your Honor.
Why not? Find out at once.
Yes, Your Honor.
Elsewhere, four helmeted guards bring Quasimodo before an elderly judge. Bound in ropes, the hunchback looks around the windowless room.
Quiet. Quiet.
Speak up, prisoner. The judge is deaf.
Quasimodo's eye gazes around wearily.
Your name?
The wizened judge chews a toothpick and nods at his papers.
Your age?
Quasimodo waits patiently.
Your profession.
Behind bars, other prisoners grin. The judge looks at his papers and shifts his toothpick.
Emil, have you got all the prisoners' answers down?
The guards restraining Quasimodo try to contain their laughter. Quasimodo joins in, showing his snaggle-toothed grin. The judge eyes him, and Quasimodo takes a deep breath and collects himself.
You are accused of disturbing the peace, abducting a woman, resisting the king's guard.
He peers up at the prisoner.
What is your defense? Quick, and to the point.
Quasimodo!
So you plead guilty.
25 next month.
For that, you shall be whipped.
Bell ringer at Notre Dame!
A clerk leans close to the old judge's ear.
Your Honor, the prisoner is dead. He hears nothing.
The judge fixes Quasimodo with an icy stare.
That's different. For that insolence, you shall spend another hour on the pillory.
Next case.
The guards take him away. Now, in a public square, the four guards take Quasimodo to a platform 10 feet above the street. A crier reads from a document.
We hereby announce that Quasimodo, the bell ringer of Notre Dame, is to receive 50 strokes with the cat of nine tails for his attack upon a woman. Thereafter, he will be exposed for one full hour to public disgrace.
A man anchors Quasimodo on his knees to a wooden wheel. Grangois and Clopin watch near the cathedral steps.
To think that yesterday on the same spot they crowned him their king. Today?
It's life.
Laborers pause in their work.
Getting what he deserves.
If all the nobles got what they deserve, we wouldn't have enough pillories.
It's a shame flogging that cripple.
Poor wretch.
The nobles sit together wearing fine clothes and hats. A muscular man climbs the platform and nods solemnly to the crowd. Two assistants open a wooden chest and remove a rack of leather whips. The whipper, Pierrot, removes his vest, revealing his muscular chest beneath a mesh garment. His assistants rip Quasimodo's shirt from his shoulders and bare his spiny, humped back. Pierrot chooses a whip from his rack, a cat-o'-nine-tails made up of thin leather strips. He spits into his palm, then loops the whip handle around his wrist. Quasimodo's twisted face scans the crowd.
One. Two. Three.
As Quasimodo grimaces in pain, Grangois turns his back.
I can't stand it, Clopin.
Good of you have been whipped once.
Have you?
Twice. Now I buy protection.
From whom?
The nobility.
The guardians of the old and holy tradition.
The very same. They buy it from the king and sell it to those beneath. It's quite all right. You see, after the war, and don't forget it lasted 100 years, thousands of us went from door to door asking for honest work, and we were whipped for begging. The ruling class didn't say work or starve. They said starve, for you shall not work.
And I starved.
Thousands did, till I organized the Beggars Guild.
Of which I am member number 7,419.
You needn't be ashamed. True, we're not great thieves like the nobles. Our robberies are petty compared to the wholesale plunder of the nation.
I wonder if the moral difference isn't in our favor.
Right. And someday you and I will write a book on the truth of beggary.
We will. But right now we've got to do something to stop the whipping of that poor devil.
Only the Chief Justice can do that.
Isn't the Archbishop his brother?
I don't think he can do anything, but you might try him.
Beside the pillory platform, an official on a black horse keeps count of the strokes.
29. 30. 31.
Perrat, shiny with sweat, wipes his face. Quasimodo slumps on the wheel. In the crowd, a bawdy woman sneers.
That's no whipping. He hasn't shed a tear.
Those possessed of the devil never do.
It's the whipper's fault.
What do you mean?
Our whipper would make him cry.
You mean you have a better whipper in Marseille than we have in Paris?
Yeah.
They start to scuffle. On the platform, Perrat's assistant hands him a fresh whip. Now, inside Notre Dame, Grangois paces in front of the Archbishop.
I know. Isn't there any way to stop the whipping? I wish I had the power. Quasimodo belongs to the world of the church, doesn't he?
He does. Yet if he ventures into the world outside, he must accept its laws. If his punishment seems unjust, there is a higher power who watches and avenges.
The counting official strikes the platform.
49. 50.
He stills Pirat's arm.
The prisoner shall remain for one full hour on the pillory.
Pirat sets up an hourglass at the edge of the platform. Quasimodo, striped with dark lashes, tries to lift his head. Beneath the platform, a man works a crank, turning the wheel on which Quasimodo kneels. As he turns around slowly, tied down at the hands and feet, the mob throws garbage at him. He ducks and snarls at their jeering faces. The wheel spins him to face all sides of the square. He bucks in vain, raging against the mob. Now in a courtroom, a man speaks before Frollo's bench.
The service of the Palace of Justice are overflowing with prisoners. It's the same throughout France. It's not the common thief and murderer, but the thousands and thousands of heretics, free thinkers and preachers of sedition that are our problem. We have to build more prisons.
It's not more prisons we need, it's more executions. You're far too lenient. What did you find out?
The prisoner Quasimodo has already been sentenced.
Where is he?
At the pillory.
The council is dismissed.
Outside, Quasimodo turns on the pillory wheel before the ornate facade of Notre Dame. His swollen, cracked lips hang open. His sweat-soaked hair sticks out in matted clumps. His thick tongue lolls against his protruding front tooth.
Water! Water! What?
At the edge of the square, Frollo appears, trotting his horse toward the pillory. Quasimodo squirms with excitement as he rides closer. Glancing up, Frollo reins to a stop. On the high platform, Quasimodo smiles broadly and bounces up and down. The High Justice glowers, then continues on his way past taunting peasants who hold their sides with laughter. Quasimodo frowns gloomily, his drooping blind eye motionless, and his ears drawn back from his face. He gazes blankly at the ground below him and sighs. Clopin.
See that?
Gringoire nods.
I thought he loved the hunchback. Never trust a man with pinched nostrils and thin lips.
Esmeralda!
Where have you been?
With my people. I crept through the gates to tell them that the king has promised to help us.
Walter! 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 Walter!
One of the mob finds a rag in a dirty puddle. He throws it in Quasimodo's face.
Water.
Turning helplessly on the wooden wheel, the hunchback shakes off the dirty rag. Esmeralda walks up the pillory steps past the lounging guards. Quasimodo hangs his mud-specked head and gazes up at her with his single eye. Bracing herself, she steps closer to the now stationary wheel. Quasimodo cowers as she approaches and turns his face away. Esmeralda uncorks a water skin and offers it to him. He pulls back in his restraints and presses shut his thick lips. Esmeralda persists and trickles water over his lips and chin. Slowly, he sits back up and gazes at her. He smiles. Quasimodo blinks tearfully at the gypsy, beautiful in her ornately embroidered shawl. Sunlight plays through her thick hair. Her gentle young face looks on him compassionately. On his knees before her, he gazes into her eyes. Esmeralda stands still, clutching the water skin at her waist. Quasimodo tilts back his head and opens his mouth for more water. He drinks eagerly as she pours. The Parisian mob gapes with surprise. On the pillory, Quasimodo straightens chest high to Esmeralda. He swallows the water, blinks, and falls forward in a faint. Now Frollo visits the Archbishop.
Claude, I couldn't prevent it. Before I knew what was happening, he was already sentenced.
But do you think Jean made Quasimodo pursue the girl? He never did anything like it before. He would not disgrace us unless he were forced to. I know how disappointed you are in him, but we must bear our burden in patience.
Outside, the justice official taps the hourglass.
The hour's up. Release him.
Kara's assistants work quickly to untie the ropes. As they jostle Quasimodo with their rough movements, he stares blankly. Released, the hunchback falls over onto the pillory platform. Rolling over, Quasimodo scoots off the edge of the platform and stumbles limply down the steps. The crowd scatters in all directions, leaving a clear path across the rain-soaked square to the cathedral doors. Quasimodo falls as he tries to run. Kicking out his stiff legs, he gets up and careens toward the church steps. On his way toward the door, he lurches toward the watching crowd. Quasimodo reaches the cathedral door and disappears into the darkness. As the mob follows, he shuts the door on them. Inside, Quasimodo lowers the door's latch. Frollo stares gravely at the bell ringer's flushed face.
He gave me water.
Frollo's forehead creases deeply. Quasimodo shrinks away in tears and totters into the church nave. He falls again on the stone floor and lies still. Now, in royal chambers, a doctor bathes the king in a tub while his squire reads from a book.
Are we not all God's creatures, placed in the center of the universe, to rule with love as our Father in heaven? The time has come to regard our fellow man with respect, for only thus will we reach the fulfillment of our destiny.
No wonder Frollo fears the printed book. Imagine all the people reading this.
The printing press seems to be a great invention.
It is. I'm glad I'm living in this age of great beginnings. Ouch! You're hurting me. I should have made you my chief torturer.
I beg your pardon, sire. I wouldn't have to rub so hard if your majesty would bathe more often.
How often would you say?
Twice a year.
Twice a year?
At least.
Hmm. Would that make me live longer?
It would.
Good. I'm determined to live 100 years. And more if your new elixir does what you promise. What's the matter? Why are the bells ringing at this hour? And so strangely. What's the matter with the hunchback?
In the top of the bell tower, Quasimodo sits on a beam between two bells and pushes them to make them ring. Two laborers walk in below and stare up.
See? It is Quasimodo.
Astride the beam, he pushes first one bell, then the other. The laborers close the tower door and return to their tools.
He's getting crazier every day.
Yes, he certainly has changed.
What do you mean?
He's been different ever since that gypsy girl gave him a drink of water.
That's right. He keeps mumbling her name.
Maybe he's in love with her.
Yeah. Is that lead hot enough to pour yet?
A man works over a steaming cauldron. In the bell tower, Quasimodo lies on his back and kicks the bells into motion. Nighttime. Esmeralda approaches a garden ringed by hedges. Wearing an embroidered dress and a shimmering headscarf, she watches a party of nobles dancing by torchlight. Some men appear among the hedges and leer at her.
Who is she?
The gypsy girl. She's been invited to dance here tonight.
Grangois stands on his head.
Grangois, what are you doing?
The world looks beautiful this way, Esmeralda.
One should always look at it standing on one's head.
Grandpa, be sensible.
Sensible? It's monstrous to be as sensible as I am.
Please, remember why you're here.
To divert the noble lords and ladies of Paris, lest they take poison to end the ennui of their empty lives.
Are you ready?
Grangois bows to Frollo.
Yes, I am. Come on, bimbo.
He picks up a monkey.
Don't forget your cue, Esmeralda.
Wearing Harlequin's diamonds, Grangois bows to the audience. Now, Esmeralda backs away into the trees.
What have I done? Why do you pursue me?
What have you done? You have awakened in me all that should have stayed dormant. I have sought a tranquil existence and had it till I saw you.
Frollo shows a haunting stare.
Since then, my powers have failed me. For I cannot rid myself of you. In every book I read, I see your face. In every sound, I hear your voice. The jingle of your tambourine. I question my conscience through the deep hours of the night. Only to awaken in greater confusion.
Let me go. They're waiting for me to dance.
I don't want them to see you dance.
You're breaking my wrist.
I didn't mean to hurt you. Come away from here. Come. There are all those men who see you dance. I want you for myself alone. If I can't have that, it will be my end. And yours.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, next on our program, the flower of Egypt, the dancing wonder Esmeralda.
Grangois gestures to an archway and a goat walks out. He grins and grabs it by the horns.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is really not Esmeralda. This is Aristotle,
the great mathematician,
the miracle goat. He will tell any one of you how much money you have in your purse.
Very well.
All right.
Grangois leads the goat into a clearing where the lords and ladies picnic on the grass. Esmeralda scampers after him, snatching up her tambourine as she hurries through the garden arch into the clearing. Running frantically, she circles a group of guests, then begins to dance. Phoebus, the captain of the guard, watches transfixed. Esmeralda smiles as she dances in front of him. Shaking her tambourine, she makes a few half turns, keeping him in her gaze. Phoebus nods haltingly. Esmeralda's embroidered skirt swirls as she spins. Phoebus tosses her a flower. A blonde woman beside him frowns.
Phoebus, isn't that the gypsy girl?
As Esmeralda tucks the flower into her waistband, Phoebus comes to her and helps her up. She spins coyly out of his arms and dances around him. He clutches her to his chest. Frollo glares from the edge of the garden, while one of Phoebus's companions nudges the pretty blonde.
Come, Fleur, let's all dance!
She reluctantly joins him in an arm swing. Phoebus and Esmeralda dance out of the clearing into the shadowy wood, where evergreens hide them from view. Grangois scowls and pets Bimbo the monkey.
Well, Bimbo, this is no party for us. Come on, Aristotle.
The black goat trots the other way into the clearing now filled with dancing couples. Among the trees, Phoebus and Esmeralda lie on the ground.
Who are you? Where do you come from? Well, speak up. I'm a soldier and accustomed to being obeyed.
Yet here I sit and talk to you as if I'd never seen a girl before. Never held one in my arms. Why do I do this? Why?
Because you love me.
I love you.
Forever?
Forever's a long time. You forget I'm a soldier and gamble swiftly with life and death. I'm willing to throw my life away for you today. Tomorrow, you see, love is only a part of my life. It's a very sweet part, I admit.
For me, it's everything. It's all my life.
She sits up.
Someone here.
Phoebus jumps up and draws his dagger.
What is it?
Don't worry.
She marvels at his broad chest and chiseled profile.
Phoebus. Now I see why Luna guards the night for the soul to pray. How I welcome Phoebus' light. Phoebus, king of day.
Her face aglow, Esmeralda lies back on the grass. Phoebus drops to one knee, then brushes his lips against hers.
Esmeralda.
Say again you love me.
I love you.
More than anything in the world?
I can't do any more than just love you.
I can.
You're a woman.
So you won't love me after tonight?
Perhaps not.
Let's get away from here. There's somebody near us. I'm afraid.
Stay, my love.
Back in the clearing, the nobles dance. Some of the men laze about in the bushes. In the high grass among the evergreens, Esmeralda stands over Phoebus. She holds a dagger. Noblemen rush into the moonlight.
The gypsy, she did it.
There's the knife. Arrest her.
Now in the cathedral tower, Quasimodo shoves the bells with his hands. Two priests in white robes stare up into the rafters where the bell ringer's legs straddle a beam. The priests climb a series of ladders leading up toward Quasimodo. Below them, the archbishop arrives on the tower stairs.
Why don't you stop him?
It's impossible! We can't make him stop! The capital! He's gone mad! We can't even reach him!
Go, get more help!
The priests climb down, and the archbishop herds them outside.
Wait on all Paris.
He stopped.
On the belfry rafters, Quasimodo looks down at a figure in black standing alone. The bell ringer cowers under Frollo's fierce stare. On the outside terrace, the archbishop turns back. Pushing open the tower door, he finds his brother on the other side.
Jean.
Claude. I've been looking for you.
Good. I'm glad you came. We couldn't stop Quasimodo. I thought he'd gone mad. Where have you been? I've been waiting for you all evening. Oh, let's go down to my room. I have a surprise for you.
Frollo walks with a stiff, slow gait.
I want you to hear some new music. There's a young Italian composer. He's written the most beautiful things, and you must listen.
Frollo gazes down at his feet.
What's the matter?
You may not want a murderer in your room.
What do you mean?
I have killed a man out of love for a woman who has bewitched me. I know she is the trap that Satan has set for me. You are the servant of God. You must help me.
Lowering his eyes, Frollo kneels before his brother. The archbishop gapes, his dark eyebrows curl together in a sour frown.
Speak.
He that smiteth a man so that he shall die shall be surely put to death. But God also said, I will appoint a place whither he shall flee.
I can't help a murderer.
Frollo raises his head and stares wide-eyed. His gaze slowly drifts.
Then she must die. Who must die? This gypsy girl who has made me a murderer.
But she's not guilty.
Yes, she is. She has bewitched me, therefore she must die.
Die for your crime? That's the devil's logic. You can't believe that.
I do. A sorceress once bewitched Bruno di Firenze. He had her burned and was saved. This girl's death shall be my redemption.
You're mad. You can't commit another crime. Your conscience won't let you.
There is no crime I would not commit to free myself of her.
Then my duty is to help the girl, not you.
Claude.
Frollo grabs his brother's arm. The archbishop pushes him off.
You are my brother.
I am no longer your brother.
On bended knee, Frollo freezes as the archbishop leaves him. Quasimodo appears at the tower door. Frollo storms off, ignoring him. Quasimodo opens his dark eye wide and stares about uncertainly. Now, in a prison cell, Esmeralda sits on a straw-lined floor. The goat, Aristotle, lies at her feet.
Who's that?
Gringoire.
She climbs to a window and clutches his hand through the bars.
Gringoire.
Darling.
You don't believe I killed him.
I know you didn't.
How is Aristotle? I have a cabbage for him.
Thank you for Aristotle.
Your hands are like ice. You're not afraid, are you?
Not now. Oh, Gringoire. Why did I ever come to Paris?
Don't cry, darling.
I keep thinking and thinking how I came here to soften the king's heart toward my people. And how my own silly heart betrayed me. For that I deserve to die.
You will not. I will get you free.
You will look after my people when I'm gone.
Don't talk like that.
He suddenly tenses.
Gringoire.
Yes, darling.
Forgive me, even though it is too late.
For what?
About Captain Phoebus. Even before he was killed, I knew he really didn't love me. I've been a fool.
Don't speak of it.
She smiles.
You're not angry with me?
Never.
Oh, thank you, Gringoire.
He kisses her hand.
I hear someone coming.
Don't leave me. Don't leave me.
I must work to get you free.
Now, inside the cathedral nave, sunlight streaks through high, narrow windows onto the stone floor. As two priests walk toward the altar, one stops and cocks his head. The other priest comes to his side.
What is it?
Quiet. Somebody talking. It
seems to come from over there.
Look. It's Quasimodo.
The hunchback embraces a statue. Gringoire at the printers.
Here is the appeal. Quick, Master Fisher, quick.
Where you printed it?
To the people of Paris.
Not so fast. I must get the type ready.
How soon can we get the first 100 copies?
Tomorrow.
Good, good.
But who will distribute them?
Every student, every beggar in the Court of Miracles will help us.
Let me see.
Parisians. Day after day, innocent people disappear. Some die on the gallows. Others are buried alive in dungeons.
A squad of guards bursts in. Their leader hands over a scroll.
By order of His Honor, the High Justice, destroy this devilish apparatus!
As the guards attack the press with axes, Gringoire sets his jaw.
You may destroy the form, but not the spirit.
Later in court...
Nations, mark my words! Today it is an innocent gypsy girl. Tomorrow it may be your brother or your children or yourselves. Parisians, let us appeal to the king.
Witness!
Let us...
This is not a public square. If you do not observe the dignity of this court, I will put you in prison.
Esmeralda sits bound on a stool in front of Justice Frollo's bench.
Silence! Silence in the court! Silence!
Show him the evidence.
A short blade.
Witness, does this dagger belong to the gypsy?
Gringoire swallows hard.
Yes. It is the dagger which killed Captain Phoebus.
How could she have killed a man so much stronger than herself? It's obvious she was just trying to defend herself against the real murderer. You know she's innocent. These witnesses have proved it.
Sit down.
As Gringoire returns to his seat, Clopin pats him reassuringly.
Silence! Silence in the court!
Your Honor, surely it's time to use the torture on this stubborn wench.
Not yet. Bring in the other prisoner.
Behind his elevated bench, Frollo wears an ermine and velvet robe with a tight-fitting cap. Spectators scatter as a guard hauls in Aristotle the goat on a leash. Gringoire anxiously grips the edge of his seat.
Silence in the court!
Aristotle nuzzles Esmeralda's skirt.
Now, the witchcraft is proved. It's evident that the girl and the goat work together.
I protest in the name of common sense. In the name of man, who is not to be judged by stupid superstition and prejudice.
Remove the witness.
It's a shame when the fate of a girl depends on the...
Guards drag him out.
If the goat doesn't know the human language, why don't the judges learn the goat's language?
Esmeralda slumps forward on her stool, her hands tied behind her back. Frollo steps down from his bench.
You still deny that Satan is your master. You were sent to destroy man's body and soul. Deliver him into hell.
I am innocent.
Frollo's unblinking gaze shifts to the crowd.
Show her what she has to expect. If she refuses to admit her guilt.
Two men carry forward a shallow wooden chest. From the back of the courtroom, a ruckus arises outside the door. Then Quasimodo rushes in. Guards grab him, and he strains against the gallery railing.
It wasn't her! If you want to know who it was me.
Frollo bites his trembling lip. Quasimodo cocks his ear to the crowd. His gaze darts over the packed courtroom, where spectators rock and slap their knees. He catches Frollo's eye, and the justice sends him a fiery glare. As the soldiers take Quasimodo away, the bell ringer scowls.
Hail to the court! Hail!
In the center of the floor, the two torturers show Esmeralda an iron leg clamp they've taken from the shallow chest.
Do you confess now?
She shakes her head.
I am innocent.
Your Honor, in view of the late hour and the prisoner's attitude, there's nothing left but the torture. Proceed, the court will adjourn.
Frollo enters a chamber behind the bench near the top of the small room. The spectators begin to move toward the door.
What do you think?
She's as innocent as I am of killing that cat.
Does she confess under torture?
They all do.
I hate to see her hang.
In his chamber, Frollo hurries across the room to a writing desk. Lifting its tilted surface, he stares down through the hidden window to a dungeon. The two torturers chain Esmeralda to a rack. Nearby, iron pokers rest in a blazing fire.
Is the doctor here?
Yes.
Proceed.
Firelight glows from below onto Frollo's stony face. Esmeralda gazes straight up into his steely eyes.
Mercy! Mercy!
Frollo looks away. His bailiff rushes in.
Around. Your Honor, His Majesty, the King is in the courtroom.
The King with his squire.
No. Let's stay back here. I detest trials, but our Archbishop has made my existence unbearable with his appeals on behalf of this girl.
Your Majesty's presence here should satisfy His Grace.
Guards bring Esmeralda back in and sit her on the stool before Frollo's bench. Clopin and other spectators lean forward to see her, but she holds her head down. Six lower justices stand as Frollo enters from the top of the court and takes his seat. An attorney steps forward, clutching a rolled paper in his hand.
Silence! Silence in the court!
Your Honor, the prisoner has confessed all.
Monsieur le Procurator, we are ready to hear your requisitions.
Coram stigar demonstrata, per crimine petendi.
Among the spectators, Clopin leans toward a nobleman.
What's he saying?
He's demanding the death penalty. Maximum nostri domine ecclesiae cathedralis. Ad qui sententiam in virtuti cujus ista striga comsua capella in plaster Notre Dame executati sint.
The procurator rolls up his document. Frollo leans forward.
We will now take the vote.
The justices stand and remove their velvet hoods.
Wait!
As the old king shuffles into view, the Parisian spectators bow. Shuffling toward Esmeralda, he points to something on the floor, then touches it.
What's this? Blood.
He wipes his finger clean on his garment.
Did you confess under torture?
Yes.
Esmeralda gazes up at him, her full lips struggling for words.
I'm innocent.
You say you're innocent. They say you're guilty. I'll find out. Untie her.
Come here.
The king approaches the dagger on the justice's bench.
Let us submit her to trial by ordeal.
Picking up the evidence, he unsheathes the blade.
Is this the dagger found in her hand?
The king draws his own knife.
Here is my dagger. If you touch yours, you will be judged guilty. If you touch mine, you will be innocent. Blindfold her.
The king's squire ties a black cloth over Esmeralda's eyes. She folds her hands and moves her lips in a desperate prayer.
Choose.
Slowly lowering her hands, she reaches for the daggers. Frollo glares from his high bench. Esmeralda's pale, youthful hand touches the tabletop, then creeps forward along the velvet covering. Brushing her fingers over the fabric, she reaches left and selects her own dagger. As the king removes the blindfold, she bows her head.
The judgment is against you. I'm sorry.
At his bench overlooking the courtroom, Frollo looks down upon Esmeralda.
Gypsy girl, on such a day as it shall please our lord the king, you are to be taken barefoot with a rope around your neck before Notre Dame to do public penance. Thereafter to be hanged on the gallows together with your accomplice, the goat. May God have mercy on your soul.
Guards take the trembling Esmeralda away. Another day, a crude wooden gallows stands in the square. From high in the cathedral gallery, Quasimodo leans over between two stone gargoyles and stares down.
Bart was my mother, my father another.
A hangman sits on the gallows steps and knots a rope into a noose as he sings. Among the gargoyles, Quasimodo straightens as he notices movement in the square. Parisians shake their fists as Esmeralda rides past them in the back of an open cart. Guards in armor beat back the crowds with leather whips and make a path toward the cathedral steps. Wearing a coarse white gown, Esmeralda rides beside Aristotle the goat. Her hands are tied behind her back. A rope hangs loosely around her neck.
Esmeralda!
Granguil!
Esmeralda!
The poet grabs her arm, but guards haul him away. Frollo, mounted on his black horse, supervises the guards as they bring Esmeralda out of the cart. Barefoot, she stumbles up the cathedral steps, then drops to her knees on the stone landing. High above the square, Quasimodo sits on the gallery's parapet wall and watches the guards hold back the pressing crowd. The cathedral doors swing open, and a procession of clergy emerges. Between the doors, a carved wooden Christ holds up his hand in benediction. Acolytes with candlesticks lead men clad in black through the left doorway, while priests in white exit through the right. The clergymen rim the cathedral steps where Esmeralda kneels for penance. A priest brings her a thick white candle, 2 feet long. The archbishop gestures him away. Esmeralda lifts her gentle porcelain face to him.
Been kind to me. I kneel before you, innocent of crime.
I believe you. I cannot allow this girl to do public penance on holy ground because she is not guilty.
Frollo.
Then she will hang without public penance.
You won't dare.
She is a witch and must die. Take her away.
From the parapet, Quasimodo watches Frollo's henchmen lead Esmeralda from the steps. He leaps off the parapet, swings around the head of a gargoyle, then pulls himself onto a sheer stone wall. In the square, the crowd follows Esmeralda to the gallows. She waits at the bottom while the henchmen adjust the gallows ladder. Quasimodo continues his climb over a balcony. Below, the crowd kneels. On a narrow ledge, Quasimodo edges around the cathedral facade. The hangman unloops a short noose from his leather belt. Gringoire's face twists in anguish as Esmeralda's head lolls to one side, exposing her graceful throat. Gringoire doubles over. On the cathedral wall, Quasimodo reaches a scaffold tower rigged with ropes and ladders. On the gallows, an executioner begins to cut Esmeralda's hair. Grabbing one of the ropes, Quasimodo swings out over the crowded square and knocks the executioner aside. As Parisians jump to their feet, Gringoire throws back his head, laughing through his tears. Esmeralda faints in Quasimodo's arms. Quasimodo carries her up the scaffold tower to the top of the roof. Far below, the crowd surges through the square.
Sanctuary! Sanctuary!
In a balcony, a noblewoman stands.
The sanctuary will save her.
Oh, no, she killed one of us and must die regardless. We will go to the king and force him to suspend sanctuary.
Quasimodo lifts Esmeralda over his head. Later on the church steps.
I must see her.
Not now. Believe me, she is safe here.
But Quasimodo, he
will not harm her.
He did once before.
That was not his fault. Believe me, she is safe now with Quasimodo.
Up in the bell tower, Quasimodo carries an earthen jug in a basket. Climbing down the ladders from one level to the next, he brings the basket to Esmeralda, who sits among the rafters near the largest iron bells.
Eat. I'm going away so that you don't have to see my ugly face when you eat.
His twisted mouth smiles at her. Then he walks away. Esmeralda gets up quickly.
Come here!
She runs after him. Quasimodo's ridged hump hides his lowered head from view. Esmeralda catches him by the arm and gently draws him back. He regards her with a serene gaze as she guides him all the way back to the corner where she had been resting. Still wearing the prisoner's gown, Esmeralda moves with light, graceful steps along a wooden catwalk. She settles on the floor and Quasimodo sits down opposite her. Dangling his feet in the belfry, he grins.
You call me back. I'm deaf, you know. You would think there'd be nothing more wrong with me, wouldn't you? But I'm deaf, too. It's horrible.
Huh? Scooping his foot around a bell rope, he pulls it toward him and tucks it under his feet. Quasimodo sighs heavily.
I never realized till now how ugly I am. And because you're so beautiful.
Her delicate face gazes at him.
I'm not a man. I'm not a beast. I'm about as shapeless as the man in the moon.
Esmeralda's face buckles with a quizzical frown as Quasimodo's shoulders shake with laughter.
I'm deaf, you know. You can speak to me by signs.
She points at him, then herself.
Why did you save me?
Quasimodo's face twists tearfully, and he averts his eye.
You asked me why I saved you. Oh, I tried to carry you off. And the next day you gave me a drink of water and a little pity.
He leans his head against the thick bell rope. Esmeralda watches as his face strains with torment.
Listen. You must never leave the church. Oh, Dale. Dale.
Hang you.
She gulps and touches her throat. Quasimodo presses his fist to his sagging chest.
Let him kill me. Yeah. It's good in the church. It's high. Look.
Beckoning her to follow, he takes her to an open window which overlooks the square, hundreds of feet below them. Tiny villagers throw long shadows on the bare ground.
People. Little people. Look. Look. Here.
He points to the bells one by one.
Friends! Up there! Babies! Jacqueline! Gabriel! Guillaume! Big Marie!
Holding a rope, he touches the largest bell.
She made me deaf, you know.
He raps on Big Marie with his bare knuckles.
I can hear my friends. Shall I play them for you?
Straddling the beam between Guillaume and Marie, Quasimodo gives each a push, starting them swinging. Flat on the beam and shoves the giant bells with his feet. Grinning, he turns his head to see Esmeralda. She shows him a sweet smile which quickly fades. Quasimodo springs up, wipes his sweaty brow, then jumps onto Big Marie as the bell swings toward him. Gaping, Esmeralda recoils. Quasimodo plants his feet on the bell's flared base and rides it out into the open belfry. Esmeralda grabs her head. Turning away, she collapses on the floor. Now, in a meeting room, a nobleman signs a document and passes it to another man.
I am proud to be the first to sign. Count Dulac, I never heard of such an outrage. An imbecile hunchback takes the law into his own hands and the king approves of it. France is not to be governed by the shouting of the rabble. Nor can the judgment of our courts be willfully set aside by the church.
When the king reads this document and sees the names of those who signed it, he will do away with sanctuary for all time.
The nobleman dips a quill in an inkwell.
Can't follow.
The justice looks over his shoulder.
Your signature.
He hesitates, then takes the quill.
Your name will force the king to decide in our favor. That girl must hang, and this resolution will seal her fate.
Now, at Notre Dame, Esmeralda sits on a terrace outside one of the bell towers. Wearing a peasant skirt and bodice, she watches the movement in the cathedral square below. Homes and shops cluster between the open ground and the distant forked branches of the same river. Quasimodo joins her on the open-air gallery, carrying a small cage in his hands. Inside it, a sparrow flits from side to side, shaking its wings against the bars. Esmeralda smiles as he holds it out to her. Taking his gift, she whispers hello to the caged bird and throws it soft kisses. Sunlight outlines the regal curves of her forehead, nose, and rounded chin. Quasimodo covers his drooped eye with one pudgy hand, then his crooked lips with the other. Esmeralda catches her breath at the smooth cheek and tender eye he leaves revealed.
I have something to say to you.
Hunched over, Quasimodo takes a deep breath. His hands fall away from his face. Gaping in a tortured, silent scream, he grabs his head and violently turns away. Running around the gallery, he stops on the other side, where stone gargoyles grimace at the sky. He leans wearily against a creature's stone chest. Esmeralda collapses into tears with a caged bird on her lap. A priest finds her and rests his hand comfortingly on her shoulder. Her chest heaves with sobs.
What is it, child?
Gringoire.
Gringoire!
Now in Clopin's court.
Every man in the Court of Miracles is ready to fight for Esmeralda.
Look at that new weapon.
A small cannon.
We'll not let those nobles take away our right of sanctuary.
Don't bother me now. Gotta finish this appeal to the king. The people. The printer is waiting.
Words won't say, but I have a better way. Force!
I don't believe in force.
My friend, you're a dreamer, a scribbler, a poet. What do you want? To prove your point or save Esmeralda?
A plague on you if you don't stop arguing like lawyers. Do something.
Right. No, wait. Shall I hang Esmeralda? Gringoire, my army of beggars, thieves, and cutthroats is ready to march.
No, Clopin. We must wait.
What for?
For the effect of my pamphlet on the population of Paris.
But you forget the power of the nobility.
You forget that the king will read this too.
He failed before when they destroyed that printing press. I can't depend on pamphlets. We march!
Later, with Frollo and the king.
And this pamphlet, you say, is being distributed by craftsmen and students throughout Paris?
Throughout the whole country, sire.
My craftsmen are awakening.
The result of your printing press, sire. If we had taken the...
Oh, read on, read on.
Frollo reads a printed page.
The people have faith in their king and are certain that so long as the courts continue to use torture instead of common sense, that he will refuse the nobles' demand to suspend the sanctuary of Notre Dame.
A thrust at you, Frollo. What's that?
Outside the king's window, a mob assembles, carrying torches.
Why are they gathering out there?
The king's squire enters.
Olivier.
Sire.
What's going on?
The people fear the nobles' influence upon you, sire, and have come here to make certain you will not suspend sanctuary.
The squire Olivier bows and leaves them.
What does all this mean?
It's the pamphlet, sir.
The king studies the printed page, scowls, then raises his eyebrows.
Oh, I see.
Pacing away from the window, the king scans Gringoire's pamphlet.
This point is cleverer than I thought. This bold new way of appealing by printed petition is creating a sort of public opinion that is forcing decisions even on kings. Impertinent. But I like it. It's different.
Public opinion is dangerous, sir.
Dangerous? For whom?
Your Majesty, the Archbishop has arrived.
Let him come in.
Sire, the pledge of the sanctuary is being threatened.
Have you read this?
I have, sire. And all the people are aroused.
Good, my people. Do your work. Go on. Destroy these false nobles who want to be kings. Hang, pillage, sack them. On, my people, on.
Sire, the cathedral, Notre Dame, they will destroy it.
What do you mean?
Thousands of beggars are afraid that the gypsy girl is no longer safe in the church and are storming Notre Dame.
That I would not endure. It's all your fault.
My fault?
Yes. If you hadn't interfered with the execution, the girl would have been hanged and all would have been well.
But, sire, the gypsy girl is innocent.
Ah, the trial by ordeal was against her.
Still, she is innocent.
If you're so sure she's innocent, you must know the real murderer.
The Archbishop stares at the king under Frollo's gaze.
Who is it? Speak up.
Your Majesty.
Who is it you're protecting?
I'm waiting for my brother to speak.
Oh, what is this? A personal matter between you two? Who is it? It's the Hunchback.
No.
Then who is it?
Frollo stands rigidly.
Who is the murderer?
I am. I did it and I would do it again.
Frollo strides to the heavy wooden door. As he leaves, he reveals a glimpse of Gringoire waiting outside the king's chamber.
I don't understand.
He's madly in love with the gypsy girl.
And he condemned her to death?
Because she didn't love him.
Frollo, a murderer.
The old king suddenly straightens, his jaw tightly clenched. He yanks open the chamber door.
Olivier! Olivier! Who are you?
Mr. Gringoire.
Oh, the man that wrote the pamphlet. I would talk with you. Arrest Frollo! Quick! Quick! Come in! Come in!
Now on the street, Frollo rides his black horse to the cathedral square. A crowd gathers near the twin-towered church, which stands in darkness. As Frollo rides off, the church's left-hand door swings shut. Quasimodo's formless shadow darkens the entranceway as he stands in the open right door. Scanning the square with his single eye, he makes out the distant figures of a gathering mob. With hurried hopping steps, he closes the cathedral's massive door. 20 yards away, beyond the cathedral square, Clopin and three allies emerge from behind a barricade. The beggar king carries the makeshift cannon on his shoulder. They march across the empty square, splashing their feet through puddles in the uneven ground. The waiting mob sways restlessly as the four men approach the cathedral steps. Boldly strides to the carved wooden double doors and pounds on one with the cannon's slender barrel. Stepping back, he plants his feet and thrusts out his chest.
I, Clopin, King of the Beggars, summon you, Archbishop of Paris, to give up the gypsy girl. We've come to save her from the nobles who want to hang her. Open the door! Archbishop of Paris, or we'll break into your church.
High on the tower gallery, Quasimodo carries a lantern past cut blocks and an iron cauldron. He peers over the parapet at the square, where Clopin's army holds its position. A smaller band of men arrives, escorted by white-robed priests. Dressed in work aprons, tunics, and long hose, they strut past Clopin to the cathedral doors. Folding their arms, they block his way.
What's all this about?
Who are you?
Craftsman. Craftsman? Citizens of Paris. We've all read Maitre Gringoire's pamphlet and are here to defend the sanctity of Notre Dame. No one shall violate it.
Not even the nobles?
Not even the nobles.
I don't believe it.
Charge!
While Clopin sets up his cannon, a burly man signals the other beggars by swinging his torch in a wide circle. The army advances from the side streets, hundreds strong. They march in two flanks. From the gallery, Quasimodo watches the two lines merge in the center of the cathedral square. Facing into a stiff breeze, he breathes heavily. Eye-patched beggar leads them all to the base of the steps. Like a giant arrow, the crowd points toward the church. Now Quasimodo takes his lantern to the tower. Rushing inside, he shuffles to the corner where Esmeralda sleeps. She sits up.
People, they've come to hang you, but I keep them away. If you don't leave here, they can't catch you. No one can get in here. I wouldn't let them. If you're afraid, pull the rope. I can hear the bell.
He nods, then races out again. Lumbering back to the parapet, he hops up between the stone columns for a better view. Clopin's army waits in a giant wedge-shaped mass. Quasimodo steps back down and surveys his surroundings. Stiffly tilting his head, he looks up, then down. His searching eye settles on a block of timber. Grabbing one end of the 12-foot beam, he starts to drag it. In the square, Clopin aims his cannon at the barricade of craftsmen and priests. Clopin's torchbearer stands at the ready as another man tamps down a fuse. On the tower, Quasimodo props one end of the beam on the parapet, then lifts the other end from the floor. Charging forward, he slides the beam over the edge, and it crashes down onto the lighted cannon. Clopin's mighty army retreats.
What's the matter? Are you all cowards?
Above them, Quasimodo squats to lift a block of stone to the parapet.
Wait! You're not afraid of a stick of wood, are you? Where's your courage, beggars?
Quasimodo works the block to an upright position. Below, the beggars inch forward.
Come on! Fight! Don't sneak away like frightened rats!
Quasimodo pushes a stack of stone blocks from the gallery. It rains down on the beggars, sending them running. Clopin glares at his men.
What are you afraid of? There's no demon up there. It's only Quasimodo the bell ringer. We should thank him for furnishing us with a battering ram. Come on, lads, do your work!
The craftsmen rush to stop the beggars who swarm over the fallen timber beam. Quasimodo watches as they shoulder the pillar-thick wood and break easily through a line of craftsmen and priests. They charge the cathedral door with a beam. On the tower, Quasimodo launches a stone block, the first of a row set on the parapet. He plunges a second one onto the heads of the rioting mob. Door begins to dent under the battering ram. Another block strikes a man's shoulder and drops him. Still another falls on a man's head. Quasimodo grins as he sends down another stone. In the square, men lie pinned under the blocks. Quasimodo squirms excitedly as he notices the battering ram hammering the door. Up a smaller stone, Quasimodo bombards Clopin.
Forward!
The beggar king falls.
Forward, lads!
Clopin's army scales the scaffolds, while Quasimodo, out of stones, frantically bangs his fists together. He stares at the cauldron of lead suspended over a low fire. He hops to the cauldron, as tall as himself and nearly 6 feet across. He stokes up the fire. Inside the cathedral nave, priests try to barricade the doors with prayer benches. On the tower, Quasimodo slides a 10-foot ladle through the molten lead. The battering ram jolts the priests inside. Now Frollo walks up the tower stairs. Outside, Quasimodo dances gleefully around the cauldron.
Molten metal, molten metal, molten metal.
The cathedral door buckles. The beggars climb the scaffolds. Quasimodo stirs the molten lead. One of Clopin's men scales the parapet, but Quasimodo pushes his ladder away. The falling man smashes head first into a wall below. Bracing a giant lever against the cauldron, Quasimodo heaves with all his might. Down below, the ram smashes through the cathedral door and men pour into the nave. On the tower, Quasimodo tilts the cauldron, splashing its contents toward the parapet's gutter spouts. Gargoyles spew the lead through their hollow mouths onto the mob below. Quasimodo joyfully stomps his feet as he watches steam from the scalding lead fill the air. He swings around the gallery pillars as the cathedral's attackers shove each other aside in their retreat. The mob scatters in all directions under the hot spray. In the street, men lie motionless in pools of lead. One man tries to rise, then falls face down with a splash. The lead bubbles beneath the bodies. The king's guards ride in on horseback and roust the beggars out of the square. Herding people with their lances, the armored men clear the grounds. Quasimodo grips two columns and crows at the night sky. Dropping to one knee, he bows his head, then raises his folded hands to the heavens. He turns, his mouth agape. Hurriedly, he lumbers to the tower door. Inside the belfry, he searches the empty shadows. On the catwalk above, Esmeralda runs from a figure in black. Quasimodo climbs toward them hand over hand up the wooden ladders. Three levels up, he sees the intruder climb to a higher catwalk, then pull the ladder up after him. Quasimodo reaches for a bell rope and climbs it instead. He balances his feet atop the bell as it swings under him, then pulls his stout body to the top of a smaller bell. As he scurries up the next ladder, the intruder above him places his black shoe on the top rung and shoves Quasimodo backward into the belfry. Entangled in ropes, Quasimodo kicks his legs and regains his footing on the ladder. He stands up on it and tries to jump to the next level. He hangs on as the ladder falls away. From the shadows, the intruder heaves a chair at Quasimodo's clutching hands but misses. The bell ringer pulls himself up with his short, thick arms. Now, at the top of the belfry, Quasimodo creeps out of the darkness and carefully looks around. A gentle wind stirs his thin, coarse hair. Around him, thick arch supports throw black shadows over the gallery terrace. Quasimodo creeps toward the parapet wall. On his blind right side, the intruder, Frollo, appears and sneaks past the bell ringer as they circle each other around the supports. Frollo raises a dagger, but Quasimodo spins around and grabs it through a fork in the supports. He twists his attacker's arm, forcing the knife free, then drags the High Justice into the light. Quasimodo freezes a moment, then backs away from his guardian. He draws himself up straight, squaring his shoulders as he towers over Frollo. He steps on Frollo's dropped dagger. Lifting the justice off his feet, he hurls him over the tower wall. Quasimodo stares down at the street, where bodies lie sodden with lead. The carved image of Christ offers a blessing over the square. Later, as mounted guards assemble in formation, Grangois jumps atop a railing and waves his arm to the crowd.
Parisians! Parisians! She's free! We won! The king has pardoned her!
Now the beggar's band escorts Esmeralda and a priest down the tower stairs.
Disperse and go your ways in peace. The girl has been pardoned, and all her people are free to live anywhere in France.
On the steps, Clopin stirs, staring with glassy eyes. Grangois throws himself on the beggar king.
Clopin!
He grips the beggar's shoulders.
Why didn't you wait? I told you I could save her without using force.
I thought that was just a poet's dream.
As Clopin closes his eyes, Esmeralda comes out of the church. Priests and beggars crowd to see her. Bowing before the archbishop, she kisses his ring.
Don't thank me. Thank Quasimodo, who saved you from hanging. And Grangois, whose little printed papers set you free.
Grangois squeezes through the pressing crowd and embraces her.
Grangois!
Esmeralda! Your grace.
Quasimodo runs outside and sees Esmeralda and Grangois walk arm in arm into the crowd. The Parisians jump about them in a merry dance. Between the gargoyles, a novice priest beckons to Quasimodo, then points to the street. Above the shoulders of the throng, Gringoire and Esmeralda ride in a cart. Esmeralda looks back over her shoulder. Gringoire glances back too, then gazes lovingly at his wife. On the tower, Quasimodo dangles his feet over the wall and leans on a gargoyle's weathered shoulder.
Why was I not made of stone like thee?
Our view pulls away from the hunchbacked man sitting alone on the high tower wall. Huddled against the statue, Quasimodo sits motionless among the church's ornate carvings. Notre Dame's round stained glass window and twin Gothic towers soar against the pre-dawn sky. Words appear. The end. In a logo, a lightning bolt pierces a triangle. RKO Radio Pictures. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Robin Sitton. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Credits. Cast of characters. Charles Lawton as Quasimodo. Sir Cedric Hardwick as Frollo. Thomas Mitchell as Clopin. Maureen O'Hara as Esmeralda. Edmund O'Brien as Gringoire. Alan Marshall as Phoebus. Walter Hampton as Archdeacon. And Harry Davenport as King Louis XI.